Good evening, and welcome to San Francisco Ballet's Meet the Artist interviews. I'm your host, Charles McNeil, Director of Education for the San Francisco Ballet Center for Dance Education, and Meet the Artist interviews, as well as Points of View lectures and Ballet 101, our adult education programs, are all sponsored by the San Francisco Ballet Center for Dance Education. I am very happy to be here in the War Memorial Opera House in San Francisco on this Thursday, March 15th, 2007, and I want to give a special welcome to our podcast listeners. As many of you know, several of the Meet the Artist interviews are being recorded for podcast, and you can find them on our website at sfballet.org. Please welcome my guest this evening, someone who many of you know. He is a splendid dancer, former dancer, now a choreographer, a teacher, and he's with us because he is staging the ballet Fancy Free for San Francisco Ballet. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Jean-Pierre Frolic. Mr. Frolic began dancing in 1972 with New York City Ballet and became a soloist there in 1979. He's danced many roles that we are familiar with, including Puck in Balanchine's Midsummer Night's Dream, Symphony in Three Movements, Don Quixote, Stars and Stripes. He's danced leading roles in Robin's Dances at a Gathering, piano pieces, and a ballet that you're going to see tonight, which is Fancy Free. Oh, I should also add that Mr. Frolic was also seen in A Midsummer Night's Dream as part of the Live on Lincoln Center broadcast. Additionally, he has also performed as part of the Jerome Robbins retrospective and the Great Performances Dance in America series. So that's a mouthful.
Yes, it is.
So, can you tell me how did you come to meet Mr. Robbins? You were still a student, as I understand.
I was a student at the SAB School of American Ballet in New York. I would see him when he was reconstructing the concert. I don't know if many of you have seen the concert before. He was rehearsing and putting it together at the school with the New York City Ballet, and he would come and watch men's class, and he would, you know, loved watching the boys in class, and he would come up to some of the boys and correct them, and he took a liking to me, and he would correct me, and that was my first real encounter with him. The other encounter was when his Dances at a Gathering was premiering at the New York State Theater. It was the first time I heard an audience scream and bravo like that, because, you know, Balanchine's ballets, they're wonderful, amazing ballets, but I never heard an audience react to a ballet like Dances at a Gathering. That was amazing. It was like when I saw Fontaine and Nureyev dance Sleeping Beauty at the Met, I've never heard people screaming like that. So it was really an eye-opener. And then when I met him at the school, I've known him really since I've been 15 years old.
Wow, that's a long history. How does one go from being a student who's singled out and maybe given extra time and coaching to becoming a compatriot, as you did, in helping stage ballets and working so closely with him?
Oh, God. I joined the New York City Ballet. Well, first, when I was at the school, when I was 16, he picked me out of the school to do the figure of youth in his piece called Watermill, which is really a theater piece that everyone moves in slow motion, and it's done to a Middle Eastern music. And I was very thrilled and really touched that I got chosen to do this. And then the following year, I was asked to join the company as an apprentice because we were starting to put together the Stravinsky Festival in 1972. And within 6 months, I was in the company. A year earlier, the Balanchine wanted me to be because he wanted me to stay at the school to get a little stronger. And Balanchine had to pick me because Fernando Bujones, I don't know if anyone knew who I'm talking about. He passed away, unfortunately, who was a major star at ABT, decided not to join the New York City Ballet. He decided to join ABT. So there was an opening, and I was asked to join. So that started like that, and then Robbins would create ballets on me. He had a certain group of gentlemen that he liked to work with, that he would, you know, try certain things out in certain ballets, and It was a, I felt like a, even though I danced a lot of Balanchine ballets, I felt very close to Jerry in mm-hmm. respect to his work ethics and everything. So it started from that. And going to China with him, going to Venice as a group, he would take small groups. And then eventually I had a lot of injuries, and he was doing his retrospect in 1990. And I said, you know, I'm very interested in helping you. Do you need someone? And he said, yes, I'm looking for somebody. Again, I need another assistant. And there it went. It went from there.
Great, great. I think it's really about, like all performances, it's or performance opportunities, it's about being at the right place, the right time. And
yeah, it is about being, it's timing. So a friend of mine said to me, you had perfect timing, because it clicked. I mean, I worked so hard in the beginning, and I just made sure, because his reputation of working with him was, his reputation is that he's very difficult and demanding, but I was always two steps ahead of him. I made sure I was two steps ahead of him, because I saw him with other ballet masters and assistants, I would get very upset with them, but that's because they weren't prepared, and you have to be really very organized, and he likes when someone was organized. It made his life a lot easier.
It would also seem the kind of devotion and appreciation you have is really also based on your love of the work. I mean, as you said, when you'd never seen people, sort of show that kind of enthusiasm, the way he was able to touch the sense of...
Well, it's, his works, to me, speak to the audience. I feel he always creates community. I had a donor of the company come up to me and say how much she loved Jerry's works because it spoke to her.
Wonderful. If you're just joining us, we're in conversation with Jean-Pierre Froelich from New York City Ballet. Mr. Froelich, I also understand that your work with Balanchine has continued to this day, which brings you to San Francisco, where you're staging Fancy Free, because you work for the Rights Trust. Is that correct?
When Mr. Robbins passed away, I was left in his will as part of a committee, a group of people that decide on what companies do Robbins ballets.
That's a huge honor.
Well, he set it up that way because he has trustees and he has a foundation, and he separated his Broadway works with his dance ballet works. So he wanted to make sure his love was not for his first love was ballet. His second was not, he wouldn't say love because it was always difficult for him because you're dealing with Broadway producers and 20 million people at the same time, that his commercial theater was something separate. So he separated those both of those aspects of his career. And he wanted to make sure his dance, his ballets were kept at a certain level. And hopefully it's being done. I know here at San Francisco Ballet, I know they're, Helgi is very proud to have Robbins' pieces, and I feel the dancers here really relish working on them.
What exactly is your role as part of the committee for
Robbins'
Rights Trust?
Well, I go and I look at the videos of companies, and if you can't get a sense of the company, if they've never done a Robbins ballet, you would go visit the company, and sometimes you would have to get the dancers in a studio and try some things out.
Oh, so you have to decide if the company is good enough to do...
Well, that's not good enough. I wouldn't say all companies are good, but sometimes a style of a company doesn't really work, or sometimes a director feels that their company is better than they really are because they're very close in that, and they want their dancers, which I understand, to progress as artists. So he would love to get, you know, a Robbins work, because supposedly it's been said that they're very difficult and very expensive to have. So to get a Robbins work, it's the director feels very proud, and he can, like, sometimes, you know, say, see, I got a Robbins work, and you can't get one to another director. But that's not always the case. It's just, we want to make sure it's like a marriage. You want to make sure the ballet is right for that company. And the company looks good, and the ballet looks good. Because I've seen a lot of choreographers' pieces, or I go all over the world, not dance very well, and it's upsetting to see it. And I dance some of those ballets I've seen, and I get really disappointed that sometimes it's miscast. Not saying what I am and somebody else from the trust is doing is always right. We hope it is. Sometimes you make a mistake in your casting. It might look wonderful in the studio. You might have exactly what you want in the studio because you're right there, but then it doesn't come across on that to the audience from the stage. It loses its intimacy, and that I had that experience the last time I was here. So you make mistakes too, but hopefully you see the mistakes and you go, okay, I need to change that the next time.
Right. I would suppose a choreographer would call you, an artistic director would call you and say they wanted to do a particular ballet. Would you see the company and then say, maybe you should do this ballet instead?
Oh, that happens all the time.
Oh, really?
Oh, absolutely. Okay. They suggest a ballet, and then you go to the company and say, well, you know, it's possible, but I don't see that would really suit you.
Or right.
So you have to sometimes change your idea. Sometimes they like it. Sometimes they don't. Sometimes they say, no, I'll wait another couple of years till I get maybe a different couple of more dancers that would be suited to it. Also, it has to be put in their program. You know, sometimes they're looking for a middle ballet. Sometimes their director's looking for a closing ballet. Mm. So it has to fit what their needs are and if they have the right dancer for that role. And sometimes directors and ask for ballets and they don't have enough dancers in their company. And you go, how come you're asking for this ballet when you don't have enough dancers in your company? So I think, do you really know this ballet what you're asking for, that you're asking for? And then
have to educate them about.
Oh yeah, because sometimes we ask how many people are in your company. And sometimes they say 24, and I say, well, it needs, you know, 28 dancers. Where you're going to get the other three dancers? I'm just curious. Plus, you need understudies. And then he went, oh, you're right. So that happens sometimes.
Oh, yes.
I mean, not saying not all directors, but sometimes you really got to, you know, think about it first. Yeah. And you know.
So do you choose the dancers?
Casting, yes.
Yes, you do the casting?
Yeah, we do the casting. I do the casting. I do ask for suggestions from directors and ballet masters. We try it out, and sometimes they're absolutely correct, the director, because they know the dancers better than I do, because when you're a guest, you don't see the full range of a dancer. You don't know what they can really do, because you see them in class. You'll see a video. Sometimes you like to see a performance. You don't know, and then sometimes you're surprised, and sometimes they're all right, and sometimes they were wrong because they have to get that dancer on that stage because they haven't danced for maybe 2 weeks. So it's a balancing act. But usually I try to be myself. You try to be true to the ballet,
right.
True to what it's supposed to look like.
So it seems to me, listening to you, that the role of a trust really is so important because it preserves the legacy of that artist.
Well, that's what your job is.
Right. And then will you hand that on to someone else at some point?
That's what
they will not have danced with Robbins.
Yeah. So what? Yeah. Exactly. I call her the shadow, but it's a joke. I have someone following me at New York City Ballet right now to start to learn it. Not just me, other ballet masters. I don't do every Robbins ballet because if I did every Robbins ballet, the ballets won't get on. So you have to delegate ballets to other people. It's only, you know.
You travel a great deal for that.
Yeah. Otherwise, nothing will happen, and you get watered down and you're traveling so much, everything starts looking like a blur. So you need to have other people, you know, do things.
Right.
But yes, the big thing is the legacy, is to keep that legacy going, and I find it really very, very important. And I said to Mr. Robbins before he died, I said, I want to make sure this legacy is kept because he cared so much about his ballets. Not that other choreographers don't, but certain choreographers, you know, Balanchine was very, he helped companies survive in America. Balanchine would give his ballets for literally nothing to help Boston Ballet survive.
I've heard this.
And he really, really did wonders for certain companies. If it wasn't the same thing with the Pacific Northwest, if it wasn't for the Balanchine repertory. You know, I think it's amazing because for him, he saw that, you know, otherwise ballet in America would not survive.
We'll have a few questions from the audience in just a moment. I want to take one more moment to talk about the ballet Fancy Free. So which role did you dance in Fancy Free?
I was the first sailor, the first variation,
right.
The one that jumps off the bar.
And each one has a character.
Each one has a specific character. Hopefully it will come across tonight. I've worked tremendously on it. You know, sometimes it works, and sometimes they might be nervous, so they might not be that character. But for me, this is not really a ballet, even though it's performed in a ballet company. It's it's really a play, because if you look at the choreography, it's the first time any choreographer was telling a story with body movement, with body language. You'll see when they're doing steps, it's really they're telling their lines. They're talking their lines like in a play. So you have to, they're real people. There's no one's wearing point shoes. They're pedestrians, and they have to understand where they came from and who they are. And, you know, it's very, very important as a character.
So I've heard different stories about the inspiration for Fancy Free. Can you sort of tell me what the true origin is, what the true inspiration for Fancy Free was?
I think in 1945, New York was full of sailors, and Jerry Robbins was a young man and was really watching and very observant, and he kept on asking Lucia Chase, right, exactly. Lucia Chase, and kept on pushing for ballets, ideas he had. He had so many ideas about doing a ballet, so he came up with she kept on turning him down. So he came up with this idea of Three Sailors. And the reason why he picked Three Sailors is because when he would walk around New York, he would see sailors always in threes. Always walking in threes.
Okay.
So that was one reason why there were Three Sailors. And also a lot of the movement that some of the sailors do were when he used to hang out at bars or go to bars, he would see how some of the sailors would dance.
Yeah.
And he would mimic them in what they do in this ballet. But from here came On the Town. So after Fancy Free, some producers from Broadway saw it, and they said, can you do a Broadway show on the same subject? And that's when Lenny Burstein and Jerry Robbins basically changed the way the concept of choreographing and how Broadway shows are done in America.
Wow. There's so many unique things about Fancy Free, and one of the things I think is unique is the way the set is designed, the lighting, the set. Mostly choreographers would never give up that much surface space, that much dance space for the set and everything. How did that figure into the design of this ballet?
I think you just had a brilliant designer, Oliver Smith, who was also co-director of Ballet Theatre at the time. I just think some of those brilliant minds are not with us anymore. And I just find it fascinating that you have half the set is the bar, you're inside, the other half is the street. So what's important, because the lighting changes when you're in the street, it's kind of dim because it's early evening in the summer. When they go into the bar, the lights start to come up and you start to, you know, see they're in the bar. And you have to make sure when they're dancing in the bar that they're in one part of the stage so it doesn't look like they're in the street. So it's really hard for them to get used to that spacing. I mean, we did a lot of that spacing while I was teaching the ballet, so they understood. But at the same time, it's still difficult. They feel like they're not moving anywhere. But and plus, the set is really put in the – it's in really – it finishes – you have the first two wings and then it starts the third wing, so you're using really half the stage. So they're close to the audience, so you really could see everything.
Yes.
Otherwise, you will lose a lot, especially in a big theater like this.
We have time for questions from the audience for Mr. Froelich. Yes. So the question is, do you find a great difference between American dancers and foreign-born dancers or foreign dancers of other countries?
Oh, yes. I was going to bring that up, but I didn't bring it up while I was talking. Yes, there's
okay.
It's interesting you say that, because sometimes European dancers get it and sometimes they don't. It's nothing with their dancing. It's just a certain look and character, or the way you walk, how an American walks and thinks. And in Fancy Free, it's interesting you say that, because I originally was thinking I want to have an all-American cast for this. And then as I got started, I started to change my mind. I decided to put, you know, if you look, there's only really the women are American, but there's only one American sailor on that stage. But it sometimes can be very difficult, but I felt these dancers grasp the material very quickly, and they are wonderful. So I have in each cast mixed bag of different nationalities, because also I felt I wanted the dancers to grow as artists too, and I felt it was important that not just American dancers. I mean, the same thing with the concert. Sometimes it's so American that sometimes, but it also is very universal. So sometimes it takes a little longer for a European dancer to understand not to walk on their toes, you know, go through their feet when they're walking. Mm. Just walk on your heels like a normal person.
Oh, those are some of the differences. We have another question. Which dancer is dancing the role that you originated?
Pascal Moulin. He's a wonderful dancer.
Yes.
I mean, you can't go wrong. He has better technique than I ever had. I mean, it's just to say that. Yeah,
oh, I think he'll be glad to. He's probably listening to that right now. Yes. Question is, once you get the rights to a Robbins ballet, do you get to dance it whenever you want, for all time? Is there limitations to that contract, to that engagement?
Well, usually it depends on the contract. Usually it's a 2-year contract. Sometimes it's longer, but with the stipulation you have the same dancers. But normally after 6 months, the trust, we send somebody or whoever staged that ballet to go back and rehearse it, because I find, not always, but sometimes it gets lost after a while. And sometimes when you have in-house ballet masters, all companies are the same. So don't misunderstand what I'm saying, that sometimes dancers stop listening to their in-house, and they would rather hear, even though the in-house ballet masters are very, very good and they have wonderful things to say, sometimes if you hear it from somebody else outside, even though they've heard it before the dancers, they listen to you more, because you're not in-house, you're not part of the furniture anymore, you know? So it's a very interesting thing, but yeah, we usually send somebody out after a couple of months, unless you really are happy with what the director and their ballet master does with the piece. And sometimes they can mount it by themselves, and usually someone comes out, though, towards the end. There's another thing about this ballet. You have to understand it's a period piece ballet, okay? When you have the girl with the red bag, some people get offended that women are not treated like this anymore, okay? But it's really, you have to think of it as a schoolyard game that you play with a fellow student. You take her school bag or her lunchbox away, and you tease her, and you throw it around to the other guys, and she's trying to get it, grab it. That's how you have to see it, because it's a period piece, and it's all done in jest, and those three sailors are really nice guys. The first passerby is kind of a secretary, and she needs to get home fast. She thinks they're cute. She flirts with them a little bit, but then she's late. She has to go somewhere, and they keep on, you know, stopping her. So, and they lift her, and they take her bag, and they tease her. But you have to remember, it was a time in 1945 of innocence. You know, we have changed as a society. So we have to still think of it. It's in the 40s, and they have their hairs in the 40s. Their dresses are in the 40s. It's a period piece. So, you know, I've seen reviews that have said, you know, no one would handle someone like that. You know, she's being pushed around, and I was a little offended. I understand that. So what I've done with that, I've tried to tone it down a bit. Mm. And someone last year came up to me and said, JP, this is different. It doesn't seem so, you know, she's tough. She is supposed to hit him. And I said, well, you know, if she does that, it's nowadays it doesn't work.
Right.
It's a little, you know, the audience goes like this, so you have to be really careful how you do it. That's my responsibility to also keeping that legacy alive, because you don't want it to look dated. That's what happens to a lot of ballets. You want to keep it fresh.
Thank you. Well, you've given us insight and context, and I just want to say thank you to our audience, and thank you to my guest, Jean-Pierre Frolic. And you can learn more about San Francisco Ballet, listen to this podcast, and learn more about all of our education programs at sfballet.org. Thank you, and good evening.